Shalom. We're continuing the Enaya, Rav Kook's commentary on the Agadata in Masechet Shabbat, Daf Tet Vav. We'll read the Gemara once again. We started saying it last week. Amar Rav Kahana, Keshechala Rabbi Yishmael b'Rabbi Yossi Shalchulo. When Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yossi, became sick, deathly ill, Shalchulo, Rebbe, and more lanu shnayim or shlosha dvarim shamarta lanu mishum avicha. Tell us two or three things that you learned from your father. Shalach lehem, and he answered them with some historical facts. Things that, as Rav Kook explained last week, historical facts, it's important that they not be forgotten. It's important to learn Torah, and obviously the heart of the Torah is the heart of the Torah. The mitzvot, the philosophy, the depth, the beauty, and nevertheless, the technical details. We see the Torah goes into technical, historical details sometimes. It's also important to know. That was last week. Today, Rav Kook is going to explain what are the details that he taught them. Shalach lehem kach amar Abba. This is what my father taught us. 180 shana ad shelo charav abayit pashta amalchut al Yisrael. 180 years before the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, of the second Beit HaMikdash, the Romans had already begun conquering the land of Israel. Now, if you do a cheshbon, the Gemara Masechet Avodah Zarah tells us that the Maccabean dynasty lasted for about 205 years. Now, if 180 of those 205 years really was the Romans who were ruling, and the Maccabean kings, aside from Yehuda and his brothers, the sons of Matityahu, who were very atzma'i, very independent, but afterwards each of the following descendants tried making a coalition with Rome against the other brother, or against with the Greeks against the Romans. And
after, there were no more Hashmonaim.
Right, that's what we call the Hashmonic dynasty. And the Gemara calls it the Hashmonaim. And the Rambam says, and we spoke about that once, that the Hashmonic dynasty lasted for more than 200 years, even though only about 105 of them were actually Hashmonaim. But it includes the Herod and Antipatris and all those as part of the Hashmonic dynasty. Okay? So the obvious question is, A, why is this important for us to know? Why it's important? Is it important for the Gemara to spell out? B, why is this called the Maccabean dynasty? And why is this called the time of the second Beit HaMikdash if we see that we're already under the thumb of the Romans for most of the time? Or what's the Gemara trying to teach us here? Explains Rav Kook. Bichlal, Haya matzav Yisrael bimei bayit sheni biyichud mechuvan betor hachana ve'ezur koach. The time of the second Beit HaMikdash, the period, it was not an ideal period. We weren't really independent. We didn't have prophecy. We didn't have the Aron, the Holy Ark in the Beit HaMikdash. We didn't have a lot of things, right? The Urim V'Tumim, the Chol Shemishpat. If so, what is the idea of the second Beit HaMikdash? Rav Kook explains, it is a preparation and to gather up strength for a long exile which is about to come. In other words, the 2,000-year exile which came after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash really began with the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash 500 years beforehand. 600 years beforehand. But when we came back after 70 years in Babel, those 500 years, first we were really under Persian rule, the Maccabean revolt, all that time, it was really not the ideal. You could consider it as one long exile already from the first destruction. You can't compare. We were back in the land of Israel. We did have a Beit HaMikdash. We had, as we'll see, that the main point, we had an Anshei Knesset Agdola, the Sanhedrin was functioning. Nevertheless, it wasn't real Geula. The Aliyah of Ezra Nechemiah, most of the Jews stayed in Bavel. Only 42,000 made Aliyah. I always tell groups when I tell talk about the making aliyah today, that somebody who doesn't make aliyah is basically forgotten. Somebody who does make aliyah, look in chapter 2 of Sefer Ezra, his name, his family is written down in Tanakh forever. And most of the Jews didn't come back.
And there are way more people.
Ve'ezor koach liyamei hagalut hagdola veha'aruka. The time the second temple was really to gather up strength. We say in Kedusha, for example, V'hu yashmienu barachamav shenit. We're going to see God a second time. Because we didn't see it a second time. There was the first ge'ula. There really was not a real second ge'ula. Sometimes Chazal do refer to the ge'ula of Ezra to build the second temple as a ge'ula, but we see very clear it was only partial. Right? The Navi tells us of all the old people who remembered the first temple. When they saw the second temple, they were crying. It was so much smaller. Nebuch. There was no army. There was no commonwealth. There was no comparison to the kingdom of David. Shilachin kochot ruchaniyim ba'ofen hamaspik legalut nora'a umara kamoha. In order to gather up strength for a long, they didn't know at the time it was going to be 2,000 years, but a long and difficult haul in exile, a bitter exile, tsarich hachana rabba va'atzuma. You need to prepare a lot of preparation and a strong preparation. Because what happens is, just like lahavdil, before you run a marathon, they eat a heavy pasta meal with a lot of starches, and little by little and little by little it wears off. Okay, the longer you go, the more you run, the longer more time passes, the more it wears off. And that's why we really had to store up a lot of energy, spiritual energy, as we're going to see. V'tzarich gamken shebiyamei ha'achana yekoach ha'uma shalem. So if so, the obvious question is, if the idea of the second temple is really just a preparation for the upcoming exile, why did God bring us back in the first place? Once we were in Babel for 70 years, just keep us there and start counting the 2,000 years from then. What do we need this mini Mikdash, this mini return in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah for the second temple? Explains Rav Kook that we had to come back to have at least some semblance of being the Ummah Shalem, the complete Ummah, back in the land of Israel. L'man tuchal lishtamesh b'kochotea gdolim l'achin chayil l'yimei hara'a hanora'im. For the terrible days that are in store.
What does Rav Kook mean by Shalem here?
Of coming back to the land of Israel. Because obviously it wasn't Shalem.
Right.
But it was more Shalem than being in Bavel without a Sanhedrin, without a Beit HaMikdash, without any kind of semblance of autonomy. That's in the context, Yachasi.
But if everybody had followed.
Yeah, that's also true.
Well,
right?
Okay. I'm not clear on how that answers the question you raised, though. In other words, before the first destruction, we've been in the land for how long? 1,000 years?
890.
Oh, okay, so 800 years. And we were Shalem. The whole nation was in Eretz Israel, and they built the Beit Rishon, etc. Surely that was, and the spiritual energy from that period should have been stronger than to last 70 years of exile.
Oh, good question.
Extra 500 years or 200 years back in the land in order to.
Okay, good question. Obviously, we weren't following the Torah properly during the time of the first temple, and that's why we were sent to exile.
Okay.
That's why we're threatened with, for many, many years and many prophets, that God is going to exile us. In the end, He did exile us. The question is, okay, so that's exile. Why did God bring us back for this short blurb called Bayit Sheni, which wasn't complete? What do we gain from it? That's our topic. We gain from it that at least we have, as we're going to see, the main point was the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. We had the Sanhedrin.
So we're saying that during the short period of Bayit Sheni, we stored up more spiritual energy for the galut than we did in the time of the
Bayit
Rishon.
Correct.
Longer.
And that's the mamar that we learned 2 years ago, Chacham Adif Minavi. That's exactly where Rav Kook is talking about. That once he raised it, what does Rav Kook say in the Sefer Orot? There's a Gemara in Baba Batra that says that a prophet is not as great as a wise person. Now, our first reaction would say be the opposite. We always think that prophet is greater. Rav Kook points out that the prophets, with all their greatness and enthusiasm, did not succeed in uprooting idolatry. During the time of the first temple, there was a lot of idolatry, a lot of paganism.
But they were also,
but what they didn't have is they didn't have the Anshei Knesset Agdolah to michokek, to enact a lot of decrees. That was the chidush of the Anshei Knesset Agdolah. A lot of the mitzvot that we do in everyday life, just count the mitzvot, most of the mitzvot are midrabanan. All the brachot that we make, except for Birkat HaMazon, Birkat HaTorah, are midrabanan. Muktzah, half of Hilchot Shabbat, is midrabanan. Can you imagine Judaism without mitzvot drabanan? We'd have a field day. It's so much easier, so much. So the bottom line is,
but it's like having
the mitzvot,
like having an electrical system with no fuses.
Right? The mitzvot, which the rabbis added, that's what uprooted the Avodah Zarah. Why? That's what we're going to see. Umnam. Kishauma b'shalvata ha-gemura, i'efshar she'ikanes yafeh ha-roshem, afilu b'lev ha-gdolim li'do'og la'achin ha-chanot li'mei galut v'churban. Another aspect of the answer to Gershon's question, that when we were totally full in our ideal situation during the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, and all the Jews were in the land of Israel, and we could not prepare properly for the Galut. We needed that dip into Galut to taste what it's about, to understand the difficulty, and then to come back for a short excursion back to the land of Israel, to restart the Sanhedrin, to prepare us with all of the mitzvot and all the gzerot and takanot, the rabbinical decrees, that we're going to need for the long haul.
Like Israelis who've never been in Chutz Laaretz, who just don't understand what it's about.
Huh?
So you say that the galut is inevitable, it's going to happen any time, and therefore the first dynasty had to...
No. The question is asked, was the second galut inevitable? We always have the possibility of doing tshuva. We could have at any stage done to tshuva.
The first temple came to an end because of Shkat Amin,
Yeah.
I mean, there was no process in Kodesh Baruch Hu's plan for Am Yisrael that went against these things, that the galut had to come?
No, there's free will. We could have done tshuva, and it didn't have
but
to come.
We didn't have Anshei Knesset Agdolah, and we didn't have the...
Exactly, it wasn't working.
Why wasn't it working? Put this whole thing in, and Shlomo HaMelech, and the whole Beit HaMikdash with all the kelim, and still, I mean, so...
Without going into a long review of what we learned 2 years ago, Chacham Adif Minavi. Although actually, I think most of you weren't there, so maybe we really should do it. In a nutshell, the idea is that there's always free will. Today, people ask, "Is there a God?" Because God is hiding himself because he doesn't do supernatural miracles, because there's no prophecy. When there was prophecy during the time of the first temple, there's no question, "Is there a God?" You see the red string turn white every Yom Kippur. You see 10 miracles every day on a regular basis in the Beit HaMikdash. Right? If you lose your glasses, you go to Shmuel and you ask him, "Where did I put my glasses?" He'll tell you where you found them. You find them. Oh, there's a God. Right? Where did I lose my donkeys? Shaul tells him, they're there. For us, it's difficult to imagine. Anybody who works with college-age women can't imagine what it means. Prophecy, you know. Just ask the Navi, "Who should I marry?" You know? And every life is so much easier.
People was taken away from people.
So what it used to be is that it wasn't a choice, is there a God? The question is, who is God? Is it this God or that God or both? Is it the God of Israel or the God of Babel? But when you have a time of supernatural miracles and you have prophecy, you have to have a very strong counterbalance to enable free will. That strong counterbalance was the ecstasy, the orgies, the fun, that you had in the paganist temples. It was very strong, very emotional. A person would get high on God, but he didn't know which God it was he was getting high on. Because it's the same steak and the same wine and the same orgy, whatever God you're serving. So it's very easy to misunderstand where that religious, and it was a religious feeling,
sexuality in our temple.
Where was it coming from? So in order to have free will, it was very clear that there is a God, but our God was telling him, no, you can't get drunk, and you can't have sexuality in our temple, and you can't do this, and you can't do that. And Chazal say, Lo avdu Yisrael avodah zarah, elo latir latzmam arayot. That's why they went after paganism. It was a totally different kind of free will. Now that free will, prophecy, with all of its, Rav Kook likens the prophets to poets, to satirists, to authors who described, the Nevi'im described the situation very well. And they protested against the situation. And they said it's not good to take advantage of the widows and the orphans and to serve idols. And they really got emotional about it. But it didn't do anything. Nobody listened to them. And Rav Kook says the world needs poets and needs emotion. But that really doesn't solve the problems. What solves the problems are the more exact sciences, the engineers, the doctors, the biologists, the researchers. That is the job of why Chacham Adif Minavi. The job of the rabbis is life is made up of small actions, of small deeds. Most of life is eating and drinking and sleeping and going to work and speaking. How do you speak to your neighbor? How do you speak to your children? How do you pay income tax or don't pay income? All the small details of life, that's what makes up life. So if your small details have greatness, have godliness, have idealism, then your life is idealism. And the Torah, even though there are not a few mitzvot in the Torah, it wasn't mikadesh all of the small details in life.
Therefore, this gula really started with time of the first bed mikdash, and not the second bed mikdash.
Yeah, that's to a certain that the problem started. The galut started in the time of the first bed mikdash. The solution, that's exactly what we're saying, what Rav Kook is saying, began in the time of the second bed mikdash. Okay? He really goes more into detail. That's why I asked Gershon to photocopy it. Mamash, the exact same idea, but he goes a little more into detail in his Rav Kook's commentary in Masechet Bikurim, Enayan Bikurim, Gimel, chapter 3, Piska Gimel. It's Seif Kafchet 28. It says in the Mishnah Masechet Bikurim that the people who live close to Yerushalayim, Akruvim, Hayu Mevi'im Te'ini Va'anavim. The first fruits, we know, were brought to the Beit HaMikdash, starting from Chag HaShavuot to Sukkot, Chanukah, Kriyat HaBikurim till Sukkot. You bring it without reading the Kriya, Chanukah. So if you live close to Yerushalayim, you would bring fresh figs and fresh grapes. Varechokim, those who live far from Yerushalayim, what would they bring? How would they bring their Bikurim, their first fruit? Mevim grogrot v'tzimukim. Dried figs and dried raisins. Explains Rav Kook. Halata bikurim el makom ha-mikdash, the bringing up of the bikurim to Yerushalayim, to the temple, makom einam v'libam shel Yisrael, the central focus of the nation of Israel, the national capital, the religious capital, ra'oi lo lahatvot et ha'erech shel ha'yachas shel kol ish prati v'asakav ha'pratiim el kirvat Hashem v'oro or Yisrael ha'klali. how a person brings his bikurim, and the two different approaches to bikurim symbolize the two different approaches to serving God. V'nei k'shem sha'teinim va'anavim himlachim mle'im leshed ra'anan. Just as when you bring those who live close to Yerushalayim brought fresh figs and fresh grapes, full of moisture, lishad ra'anan, freshness, v'tovim ma'od le'inyan akrovim she'en aliyatam richuk drachim v'torach tipul shmira. They don't have to worry about the fruit getting rotten because it's a very short journey to Yerushalayim. Umutamim biyoter le'erech ha'grogrot v'atzimukim. On the other hand, the idea of serving God, bringing to the Beit HaMikdash dried fruit, that symbolizes the people who are a little further away, who live a little further away from Yerushalayim. Shebehem mevatrim k'tzat al noam atam, who they give up a little of the freshness, the sweetness, the moisture, k'dei litkayem, but that it shouldn't rot, so that it continue to exist for a long, long time. L'man yuchal levo gam mimakom rachok el har Hashem, so that you can come from even a far away and a long galut, a long distance, to come back to Yerushalayim.
But only from Eretz Yisrael.
Right, we're talking symbolically. Kach yesh chiluk bein darkei ha'chayim aruchaniim shebehem ma'alot rabot chalukot. There are two stresses in serving Hashem. One is the power of Torah, and the other is the power of prophecy. And again, remember, prophecy is juicy. It's fresh. It's exciting. It's emotional. That is the first Beit HaMikdash. The dried fruit, that's more the second Beit HaMikdash. Koach haTorah al yedei harchavat Torah shebaal peh, al yedei kibutz veributz poalim laTorah, dikduke Torah vedikduke sofrim beomke halachot, shem nirim dvarim yaveshim leerech haleshad anireh binyanim amidyachsim lenevuah. Compared to the juiciness, the freshness, the emotion of prophecy, the dried fruit is lacking it. Ha'asuka b'chokhmat elokiyot u'drachim elyonim shemehem yistafu dvarim gdolei erech b'igyon lev b'tfila b'chokhmat tzfonei Torah. Umnam biyotenu krovim el ora eloki netuim ba'artzenu haya ora nevuah memalei makom gadol b'olamenu. The idea of prophecy and seeing God and having an emotional high, that freshness, the juicy fruit, that played a central role in life, in Torah. V'chein anu muftachim la'atid b'ofen yoter na'ala. So too we're promised that Bezrat Hashem, prophecy will return, and we will return to the juiciness of the mitzvot. Talking about an ideal world in Yomot HaMashiach. Halach ha'mechayet lev ha'nefesh bo'or da'at Hashem. What is prophecy? It gives life. It gives spirit. Knowing God, speaking to God, speaking to people who speak to God. Ve'hod kvodan shel Yisrael elyon haklali shum leziv v'zor ha'chayim le'im tal deshen ma'od. But, as Yehoshua said, it didn't work. It wasn't enough to offset the paganism, because paganism also supplied a very strong, impressionable religious experience.
And they didn't have to deal with scruples like limiting the base desires or having to tell the truth or anything like that. So there was in the short run there's no competition because they don't play by the rules.
Right. Hinenu rak az muchanim lekabel baofen sheye beinenu nishmar biyotenu krovim el beit Hashem netuim al admatenu ubetuchim bechol mikol bilbulei ruchot verbuvei deot. Omnam kasher itrachaknu bashmatenu meretz chemda. But when God removed us, exiled us from our beloved land, v'utal aleinu ol derech rechoka shogalut marav nimara kazot, Az alenu lachgor oz al yedei dvarim amitkaimim anishmarim betzivyonam. That's when, as a preparation for the second galut, for the long galut, we had to prepare ourselves, and that's what Bayit Sheni was about, to prepare the raisins, dry the figs. That even though the gzerot and takanot and all the rabbinical decrees that the rabbis issued during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, they're not so exciting, they're not so juicy, they're not so emotional, but they last a long time. And that's what enabled the Jews to last a long time. You know, Achad Ha'am said it, Rav Kook isn't saying it, but to a certain extent it is true, that even more than the Jews observed the Shabbat observed the Jews.
You mean preserved?
Kept the Jews, preserved the Jews. Now, if you add on to the Shabbat all of the Shvutim, Mitzvot Drabanan, Muktza, you have that much more Shabbat, you have that much more preservation. There's no comparison if you look at first glance and externally the Beit HaMikdash without prophecy, without the Aron, without the Urim V'Tumim, without so much of the greatness, it was lacking the moisture. Umahem hem arba amot shel halacha shemiyom shecharav Beit HaMikdash ein lo lakadosh baruch hu ela hem. The Gemara in Brachot that says from the time that God exiled us, destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, the only place he has in the world are the four amot of halacha. And that's why we had to add on, the rabbis had to add on halachot, even though they're dry. And that's unfortunately what happened after 2,000 years. Judaism dried up. The mitzvot dried up. If you're only eating raisins and there's no moisture, there's no wine, the Mechilta says that Torah is like wheat. Agarata, to learn the depths, the Kabbalah, the mystical, the philosophical, that is like wine. You can't have a meal with just dry things. And eventually it dried up. And what happened after 2,000 years, Rav Kook explains there in Orot, in Chacham and Dif Minavi, is that we went to the other side, the pendulum swung back, that if we went too much into the direction of emotion, and it brought us to even an emotional God, a physical God, right? A high God. God sent us to exile, that's the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, to institute Chochmah, more details, more mitzvot, to hallow the small details of how to eat more holy, how to drink more holy, how to talk more holy, all the brachot, all the tefillot. The Jew is always busy with davening. All this is, most of this is midrabanan. We swung to that pendulum too much. And that's why the Chalutzim and the Reform and the Enlightened look at Judaism and say, this is Judaism? Where's the Simcha? The Baal Shem Tov asked the same thing.
Reform Judaism, where, even less.
In the end, yeah. But they're saying this, it's meaningless. The mitzvot are meaningless. And that's why they swung back to looking for emotion. And that's Chasidut. And those are the Karl Bachminians and things that we're looking for today, where in the end, as Rav Kook explains there, the highest level, the ideal is Chacham, who is also a Navi. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, in Torat Moshe, he has a lot more details than Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu doesn't talk about details, he just says, be a good person, you know? Don't take advantage of the widow. He's talking very, very klali, doesn't get into the details. That's the problem with Yirmiyahu and Yeshayahu and the prophets, and it wasn't working.
That's why the Christians and the secular Zionists liked it so much.
Exactly. Rav Kook brings that down in that Ma'amar. But the ideal is Moshe Rabbeinu, who is also a Chacham and also a Navi. Also the emotion of the moist mitzvot, and the meaningful mitzvot, and the prophecy, which will return, now that we're coming back to Eretz Yisrael, together with the details, which will continue.
We're talking about generations of generations of generations. We've passed down these lack of insight from one generation to the next, and all of a sudden, wow, we're without anything. Let's
pull ourselves together?
It's Judaism looks, and for sure Rav Kook looks at Jewish history as something, and all history, as something that develops. We were not born into a vacuum. We learned, even subconsciously, from previous generations, who learned from previous generations, who learned from previous generations. We've all been here before. I'm not even talking about ifs, we're talking about Gilgul Neshamot, Pshita, you know, obviously. But even without that, Judaism sees the world as something progressive. Let's just finish off. Umnam, dvarim yeveshim nirim gufei alachot lemistakeh rak beshitchiyutam, aval koach hayim ra'anan tzafun bahem. The details that we prepare during the time, during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, to prepare us for the food, to dry up the raisins, and to prepare us to have what to eat, to nourish, spiritual nourishment for a long 2,000-year-old exile. Vehemem shem midu otanu la'am kadosh Hashem Elokeinu b'chol kovid galut achal hazeh. Al ken, bebayit sheni, Shaya bi'ikaro, here's the punchline, during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, Shaya bi'ikaro hachana el ha'atid ha'aroch shel ha'galut va'pizur. The main point, and that's what he's saying by us, the main point of the second temple was to prepare us for the long exile. Kvar paska nevua. There already was no prophecy. Kedei shiyu ha'kochot ha'ruchaniyot sheba'umah shitasku b'noam ora nevua. That we should get used to Judaism without prophecy. We should get used to a more dry Judaism. Maybe a more intellectual Judaism. And that's something that would last and hold up over 2,000 years. Asukim bimkoma ba'omek pirtei alachot. Instead of dealing with prophecy and ecstasy in the temple with all the gold and the silver and the meat, and we dealt with in the time of the second temple ba'omek pirtei halachot, with the depth of the details of halachot. La'gbil darkei Torah ba'ofen amduyak ma'od, to set the fences, to protect. Kedei shiyuchal am Hashem litkayem gam b'merchakim al yidei tztanuto yitera b'ribuy adiktukim, etc., etc. So that's how Rav Kook explains the idea that the Bikurim, there is a time for close Bikurim, for moist Bikurim, fresh Bikurim, but for those who are far away, there is an advantage in and a legitimate time for dried Bikurim, drying up the raisins and the figs.
Can you bring wine for Bikurim?
I don't remember. Getting back, just to finish off our Piska. Alken, Me'et Hashem Haitazot, it was the part of the godly plan. Ki b'meshech zman gadol, ad shelo charav habayit, and that's what the father of Rabbi Yishmael ben Rabbi Yossi taught us, that even before the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, shaita uma mechumeshet b'chol kochotei ha'gashmim v'aruchanim, kvar pashta ha'malchut al Yisrael. Most of the time, we really were under the thumbs of the Romans. In other words, we already had a taste of exile. And it was a purpose so that we could develop in Eretz Yisrael a Torah that would last throughout a long exile. The dried figs, the dried raisins. Ukavar hayat safui lecho yodei bina b'musag chushi shemamada meinenu ki'imamad arai she'omed la'aris ve'vigalut. People knew that it was just temporary. Zeloze. Anybody who saw the first Beit HaMikdash knew that the second Beit HaMikdash was not going to be the final one. And if there's no Urim V'Tumim and there's no Aron HaKodesh and so much is lacking, and most of Am Yisrael is in Bavel and never came on Aliyah, everybody knew that they, even though those who returned, it was really just a temporary return as a preparation for the long, another exile, which is going to be a preparation for the big return that we're seeing today. Al kein be'od moed. In time, before we lost hope, be'od ha'kedusha shleima imahem, while we still had that kedusha shleima of being in the land of Israel, of setting up a Sanhedrin, be'od ha'mikdash kayam, v'amerkaz ha'ruchani al mechono, the Sanhedrin, Anshei Knesset HaGdola, levatzer ha'ma'amad ha'ruchani ba'ofen ha'maspik, It wasn't the ideal, but it was enough to prepare us l'derech arukah v'afela shel galut hachil hazeh. Here Rav Kook Dafka, he's quoting a pasuk from Ovadia. Hare Ovadia, from Treyasar, he was prophesying in the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, before the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. But he's already talking about going to Sfarad and going to Tzarfat, and Rashi and Radak say, that's Europe. That's the second hall. Hagalut hachel hazeh, it already began, already in the time towards the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. In other words, it was like a little return to prepare for the long haul of exile.